Here at Millennial Crisis, we acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We also pay our respects to the elders, both past and present, always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
If someone shows you who they are, believe them. So I think that's really important to just be like, don't expect somebody to change just because you want them to. And one thing that's like really important to me is boundary setting in that way. If you're not my people or whatever, like, bye.
Hey, it's Demi and welcome back to another episode of the Millennial Crisis Podcast. Today's guest is an incredible woman who's utilized her personal and isolating experience living as a biracial woman in Australia and turned it into a global movement and art exhibition. Her name is Sabina and she is the founder of Where Are You From? Sabina often found herself being asked that loaded question, where are you from? And although to some of you it may not seem like something that's loaded, to others listening, I don't believe I need to say more. We talk through the reality of what it's like building a brand with a cause, how just because you have community engagement, a good cause, and passion doesn't mean things are easy and you can make a living doing it. This conversation really dives deep into why language matters, how our lived experience isn't the same for everyone, and how we can be better allies for marginalized communities. Sabina is so inspiring and is doing some incredible work, so please do go check out her page and go and support her in any way you can. I can't wait for you to listen to this conversation because I honestly loved every second of recording it. So let's jump straight into episode 69 of the podcast, Your Experience Matters and It's Valid.
Hi, I'm Sabina. I am 30 years old and I am a writer and curator. I think I'm best known for my project, Where Are You From?, which is a photojournalistic series about cultural identity and the experiences of people of colour, mostly in Australia, but also soon to be around the world.
Soon to be around the world. Has that like sunk in that yet that you're going global or...?
Yeah, so I was in America for the last part of my trip, but I went to London for a week and we did a photo shoot for Where Are You From, which will be the first international, I guess, iteration of the project. I guess I've been thinking about that for a while because before lockdown happened, we were going to do an exhibition in Paris. And that obviously like all kind of fell to pieces when, you know, the world was put on hold for a couple of years. During that time, I was thinking about how London would be probably a better place to explore the project there, like internationally for the first time, because it's a little bit more similar to Melbourne in terms of the landscape. And, you know, being English speaking, I could have, you know, embark on that journey myself as opposed to before where we'd been offered that by a like creative agency who like spoke French. And it was a kind of their initiative. But yeah, I just kind of decided to do that after travel became available and it was really exciting. So yeah.
That's so exciting. Have you been able to, I guess, like celebrate the fact that this is something that is growing and people are looking into overseas, whether it's you going over there or what? Like, is that something that you're able to like look at now and go, oh my God, this is really cool?
I think it's really cool. Yeah. And I think that I'm at a point with the project that I'm kind of taking stock of all the things that we've done because we've done like quite a few really amazing, I keep saying we, but it's just me.
I am the same. And when we first had our conversation, I was saying we, and I think I said the same thing and then you were like, oh, that's what I do. And I was like, oh my God, like I love this because I'm always saying we. And I'm like, one, this is like completely me just doing things on my own accord. And I think it's the same for you. Like when we spoke about going overseas before, you were like, oh yeah, I'm just going over there. And like, I'm going to do that over there. And I was like, that's why I'm asking. Cause I'm like, are you doing what I do as well? Where you're just like, oh yeah, it's just this like little thing when in reality it's huge.
Yeah. Like you do minimize it. Hey, when it's just your thing, I think that also comes from the fact that like, you don't like, it doesn't feel the same for some reason when you're like, I'm just going to go and do my project because I've been told to keep going by someone along the way. And so even if it were the same opportunity that someone offered you, when you're doing it yourself, it's not that kind of like, oh, someone's given me external validation, even though it's the same level of achievement that you're doing. So yeah, I am really proud of the fact that we're moving over there, and it also was received really well. Everyone really enjoyed the shoot and like resonated with the idea. So I'm excited to see how it turns out, and using that to keep my head in the process and to keep moving forward as quickly as I can.
I'm glad to hear that you are now, like what you said, you are taking time to like be able to reflect. Cause like I said, I think that we do tend to like minimize these things often, at least like I do, and a lot of other people that have been working on their own projects are the same thing. And I think it's really strange because it is harder, if not harder, for you to do these things when it is on your own accord versus somebody telling you to, because then you're also motivating yourself, which I think is like a whole other thing. And obviously there has to be a big drive or purpose behind that for it. What do your exhibitions look like? Is this where you showcase like the imagery and then tell the stories through that?
Yeah. So in a gallery, like physical space, it is portraits hung in like a normal gallery fashion with the stories next to it. So you look at the image and then read the story. Some of them are longer than others. So there's like a lot of variety in terms of the style as well. So depending on which photo you land on, if you read them all, it's like the same topic, but different. And then when we did Hair, which was a 2020 exhibition we did, that was like the first intersecting topic for the project, we did like an Instagram gallery. So it was a similar kind of thing where the slider space became the gallery wall, but there was like obviously much less text and more graphic design involved, and also stories and video and that kind of experience. So I think I'm going to utilize that format more going forward to have a combination of the two, because it was really accessible to a lot of people to see it online and remotely. And it was just exciting to see what we could do with the design as well. So that's probably the two main formats that we do.
That's really cool. I just realized it's probably very worthwhile for anybody listening to know where Are You From is, and I guess what the initiative is, and what kind of messages you're trying to spread and stories you're trying to tell.
Where Are You From is a photojournalistic project, meaning that it's photos and stories about the experience of being asked the question, where are you from, and cultural identity in general. And I started it because I was asked that question my whole life. I'm Australian, obviously, but, you know, I have an accent, and like, I mean, there's many things that can define you in terms of your cultural identity, but that was something I grappled with in particular when I was growing up. Acknowledging that I was, you know, my parents are settlers as well, but I was very displaced by that question, and it made me feel like I didn't belong. And obviously, like, that question was posed to me more than other people because of the way I look, because I have darker skin. And I was also in a position where every time I was asked that question, I was never allowed to feel the way I felt about the question. So it would always be really casual. And if you didn't answer the question right away, or, you know, with a smile on your face, it was like you were being antagonistic or making a big deal about it. And I always kind of just felt really uncomfortable because it felt like a bit transactional, and that people I didn't even know were like asking me something really personal, and, you know, it was a bit triggering. Anyway, so I spent years being asked that question and went through all the waves of like obliging it and then being like, I'm not going to answer that question, and then being upset, and like every wave of emotion I kind of traveled through. And I think the more I learned about my cultural identity and cultural identity as a, you know, ideological experience and discussion, societal or whatever, I became more comfortable with who I am, and then thought that like reaching out to other people like me to see how they experience that question and their cultural identity in general would be beneficial for that journey. Yeah, because it was kind of like, I was like, am I like overreacting, or am I crazy, taking this too personally? And so I was like, if everyone else says that it's no big deal, you know, I'll put it to bed, don't answer the question. But I mean, in simple terms, but yeah, it was really interesting to see how different the ranges of responses to that were and how people felt about it. And most of it, through most of the stories, like, it's very impassioned, it's very emotional. A lot of people have cried at my exhibitions, like even to like up till this year when I had an exhibition at a university, like one of my friends was really triggered by it. And I'm like so grateful that the work is able to hold that space for other people as it is, as well as it is for me, because in a way, like, I created that work for myself to affirm my own experiences. And I think that the beauty of it is that it affirms so many other people's experiences of cultural identity. And yeah, so I guess like in terms of the intention, I want to keep giving people that space and giving people the opportunity to talk about their experiences of race and cultural identity, because for a lot of people that I've interviewed, they haven't even like thought about these things before, and or they don't feel entitled to be open about it and open about how they feel about it. And I think that's really sad, because I definitely have been, as much as I've gone through my own journey with it, I've always been so in touch with myself and been self-assured and like always talking about things that are important to me. And so I think it's beautiful that people through that work can have the opportunity to have some of that for themselves as well.
It's amazing work that you're doing. And what I find super interesting, I don't know about other cultures, but I think Australia in particular, is the way that we are so like blatantly racist, so much so that people of color often can't, like you said, like might not have even acknowledged that or are felt to fear or made to feel like they're the crazy ones because of questions like, where are you from? When you see, like, some people are like, oh, I'm just asking, like, what's the thing? But it is such a loaded question. Like, what do you mean, where am I? Like, it's, and I'm curious to know from you as well, is there a difference between asking, like, where are you from and what's your background? Or do you find them both just as loaded?
I think it's all about like the context of when the question's being asked. Yeah. But I think that, you know, what is your cultural background or what's your background is a much better way of asking, because it's more specific, you know, it's referencing your story. It doesn't kind of like imply why are you brown or like why do you look the way that you look, or please explain why you're here.
Why are you here? That's what I feel like. Where are you from is like, why are you here?
Because like people ask me that a lot about, is there a better way of asking the question? And I think that like reflecting on it, you know, why you're asking that question, because personally that's not the first question I'm asking somebody when I meet them. It's like if race is the first thing you see, or you know, something about somebody's identity that doesn't conform with like what you think is normal or what you think belongs, you should be interrogating that, because that's an inherent bias that's causing harm to people, whether you ask it casually and like where you're from, or you're being overtly, you know, racist to people or behaving differently to some people over others.
The reason I ask is because I think also we have these conversations, like I've found myself often now, because there's so many conversations about this, sometimes questioning me sometimes and being like, when I do get, again, it's not a first question, because I think it's strange to ask people in your first conversations with people. But then when I dive into more of understanding who a person is and asking what's your background or what's your heritage, because they've mentioned something about something, I even question myself, because I'm like, oh shit, how am I diving into things? And I think it's really great that we are starting to do things like this now and being able to have more of these conversations and discussions. That's a great, really great way to put it, is like making sure we're always asking ourselves, like, why are we asking this? Is it because it's what people have always done, or are we asking it because it adds to the context of the conversation, or it is something that it's where things like it's necessary to find out, or it's about like the curiosity of that person. Does it add to the context of the situation, and is it suitable there? And I think that comes with not only questions like, where are you from, but also questions like, what do you do for work, or how are you going, or all of these things that we kind of sit into where we're just like, everyone just asks them. So we're like, well, are we asking, why are we asking these questions?
It kind of implies as well that with the answer, it would like determine how you are going to interact with this person. Because I grew up like in the south side of Melbourne, and the first question that people would ask at that age was, what school do you go to? And that's obviously, what school do you go to? Do you go to a private school? Do you go, you know, how do I relate to you? It could be like, am I going to know people, you know, that you went to school with or in the neighborhood that you grew up in? But I think the biggest thing of that is like determining where you sit in terms of like social class, I think. So it's a similar function, you know, with questions like that, where it's like, oh, you're from here, maybe I'll interact with you in this way, or like, oh, you're not actually from here. So like, you know, it's kind of like a similar like experience where it's like a draw card for how you're going to treat someone or how you're going to perceive someone.
When you first said that, I was like, oh shit. Like I definitely went like, oh shit, is that something that is? Because I've definitely been like, oh, what school did you go to? If you find out where someone like grew up or something and you go, what school did you go to? But the thing that I'm trying to like realize, like the older I get, is that we're socialized to be like conservative, inherently sexist, racist, homophobic, like all of these things, because that's what our systems imply. And that's the way our world runs, right? So it's important. And for everyone listening, that like the only way we can move forward is acknowledging that we are inherently racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, all of these things, and making sure that we are actively anti those things. And so being able to listen to these conversations and go, okay, to me, if somebody asked me, what school are you from? I grew up in Doncaster in Melbourne. So it's like I don't want to say in like a nicer suburb, but it is like a
more affluent.
A more affluent suburb, right? Like it grew to be a more affluent suburb, right? Just like so many other places that used to be were deemed less and now are more because they're like become trendy or whatever as like cities grow and stuff. So I've never had an issue with questions like that. But then I'm looking from the other side and thinking like people who may have had people like look at them from different suburbs and go, oh, you're from there or you're from that. And so questions like that are more loaded in those contexts. And I think it's like it becomes part of acknowledging your privilege in certain areas and going like, oh, it's never been an issue for me, but that doesn't mean it's not an issue for other people. And coming back to that part.
I mean, I feel like in like more at the time, you know, when we were that age in school, it felt differently. Definitely now if someone is like, oh, I grew up in St. Kilda, I'm going to be like, okay, what school did you go to?
Yeah.
In saying that, like I went to a public school that was like the most, you know, I grew up in St. Kilda and Elwood and all those suburbs that are, you know, very affluent, very inner city. But yeah, I went to Elwood High, which is like, was the worst school at the time. In high school, if people asked me what school I went to, it was like, you would get anxious about saying that or, you know, and because all the people around me went to private schools and that was like, you know, the thing. So I definitely think it depends on like the time, but I see what you're saying and that like it's a way to connect. And I guess like that functions in the same way with where you're from. It's like sometimes people ask me where you're from because they want to know if I'm like them or they want to know if that will share similarities in our cultural identity or something like that. And that's okay. I think there's context, you know, for everything.
I think it's interesting because when I ask the question or when I look at people for like public or private school, because I went to a public school as well, like I feel like I can usually pick out a private school kid and I'm doing that same thing. So I'm like, oh yeah, it shows.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like it shows. It's interesting. And a lot of these things, like again, context is super important and it's about like where the intentions are coming from. A lot of people see issues or experiences that they're having. So for you, you were having this experience and you were trying to like validate or invalidate like, oh, am I okay to feel like this? It's wild that so many people have these individual experiences that go, am I crazy? You know, and you're thinking like, why am I made to feel this way when so many other people are made to feel this way again? What made you want to take action? Because I think so many of us sit here and we can see issues that are happening or we can see experiences that we're having and we can talk about them. But what made you want to take an action and go, you know what, I'm going to do something about this or share my story more, create something where people are able to share theirs as well?
So I guess like there's two ways I can like approach answering this. So like literal circumstantial sense of like answering, I'd finished uni for the year, 1 year, and had like 3 or 4 months at my disposal. I'd been really busy. I was also feeling like particularly happy with how I'd done because I'd like worked really hard that term. And I was like, you know, I'm going to take this time to do something creative, and just thought it was kind of like, let's just see what happens. And so I wrote a brief and like pitched it to my friend, Jess Bro here. I was mentioning the idea to her, and then she followed up and was like, come on, like send me the brief. And I was like, okay, and did it. And she loved the idea. And so that was like the first kind of like, I guess like affirming moment that I had with the idea. And then it kind of, you know, that it went on from there. But then in terms of like how I was feeling and like wanting to do something, I think it definitely stemmed from having experienced a lot of the art world and feeling really passionate about it. So I've always obviously been creative as a writer, and I was writing for years before I started Where Are You From. And when I was living in New York, I went to, I worked at an art fair for a week. It was like the first time that I'd like experienced a like super large scale commercial art event. It's like just completely different to anything that we have had here at the time. I think the combination of that and like my interest in stories and identity and storytelling, seeing something like that kind of gave me an idea for like how I could express my own ideas in a format like that. And so I think I'd reached a point in my, I guess, career or like, you know, trajectory of toward my career or whatever, where I had the tools and the understanding of like, okay, this is how things should look in this kind of context. And so I was able to do it. But even saying that, the whole process of like actually putting the exhibition together was like so surprising. I interviewed 30 people, which every series now is 30 people, but that was 11,000 words of stories that I did not even think about because I'd never done it before. I was like, okay. So I was up, you know, all night, right, you know, editing these stories, taking everything like step by step, and everything was a learning curve. The people around me kind of like saying, oh, you should put it in a gallery, or you should have a launch party, or you should do this. Like it just kind of formed its own thing by like other people's input and like recommendations and their interests, which was really cool. And then, yeah, I did it. And I literally remember feeling, or maybe even saying to myself, like, I can do anything now. Because I did this thing that I just had never done before and no one taught me how to do. And it was amazing. Like, I think like, you know, over 500 people came, or maybe about 500 people came, my first exhibition.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my God, that is incredible. And I think what I think, and this is just like my assumption, and maybe it's because I've been like lucky enough to chat with people that are doing really cool things. It's that everyone starts like that, like not knowing, just having this concept. And then there are two, I feel like, key factors. Like one, it's other people's support and help. Because I think all of these things, although we're doing the majority of it, it's just the little comments or the little like messages of support here and there that get you through. And especially with something like this, where you're showcasing people's stories, you have that extra level of, I guess, like, need to do right by them too. Is that like what would have pushed you a lot of the way as well? It's like, oh my God, I'm now sharing somebody else's experience that I know had similar feelings or some of the feelings that I had had. And now I owe it to them to do this well for them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm always thinking about like how this is going to be, well, how I'm portraying someone else's stories, because I think it's, first of all, a huge privilege to be granted the permission to share someone's experience. And like experience is not just like, oh, like I like, you know, you know, this is what I do for a living and this is how I got where I am, which is, that's interesting, but this is like cultural identity where it's like so personal and like so sensitive, you know, like, so I think that is beautiful. And I do think about that a lot. And I think also though, I'm just like a perfectionist and everything needs to be like refined, like it's my way or the highway in so many ways. Like I'm just like, I have good aesthetic eye and I know, you know, what the final product needs to look like. How I get there is the learning process, but like, you know, it's always like, does this look amazing? Is it going to be amazing to walk in the room and see this and read this or whatever? So
no, it's unreal. And I definitely, although me and Savina don't know each other that well, I can say that pre this recording, the perfectionist was already coming out in making sure that everything in the background was okay and all of that stuff. So we love that. I think it's incredible. And I love being able to speak to people that have that same thing of coming to that realization in the beginning of their career or in their 20s or whatever, that like you really can do anything if you put your mind to it. And that's one of the greatest things in particular about the day and age that we live in, is that like you can also search things up, you can Google them, you can get answers. And often, at least in my own experience, not having the answers and figuring it out by doing is the best way to learn. I don't know if that's been the same thing for you. Did you find that you were searching up a lot of things, or were you just like doing and experimenting from that?
definitely now I'm more of a, I guess, like I research, not really in depth, but I'll definitely consult the internet for things that I can't move forward with. But at the time it was very much like, okay, like this is what I've seen and this is how it should look. How do I do it? And there were a lot of lessons in that, doing things that, you know, something that would take you an hour in a way that actually took 10. Like I always think about the didactics, like the stories, whatever, that were next to the things. I'd gone to a paper shop and got this like card that I thought would be like appropriate for that. And then, you know, taken it to the printers and been like, can you like print the stories on this? And they were like, yeah, but like, we need like a, we'll have to charge you for graphic design services and like, you know, to format it. And like, cause it's like an odd size, like it'll be this. And so like, I don't know how, I can't guarantee it's going to look like this. And it was just this whole thing, and like they did it, it was fine. But you can literally just go to the printer and give them a file and they'll print it on like whatever weight of paper you want, and like that's how it works. But I didn't, you know, things like that where you're like, oh okay, like the more you do it, the better you can refine your process and or research what you did the last time and figure out if there's a better way to do it. I'm kind of like in a bigger sense of that is like the ongoing process of the project is kind of like, there's a lot of self-doubt that I'm feeling like now that it's like more established. I'm kind of like, I want to keep moving forward. I have heaps of ideas, but I'm like, how do I sustain this? Like, cause there's no blueprint for how to do what I want to do. I don't know where I look for that, because that's a lot more intricate than like looking up on Google how to print didactics.
My journey was like similar with Millennial Crisis in that I just like, I don't know, I was like, oh yeah, I've got this concept. Like I'll try doing this thing. And I talk a lot in like our community. We do like a lot of conversations weekly, and we did one on like Dunning-Kruger theory. Have you ever heard of what that is? So essentially it's the concept of like, the less you know, the more you think you're capable. Let's say like when we kind of like started out, you're like, oh yeah, I'll be able to do this thing. Like it'll be fine. I'll figure it out. And then each step you go, oh shit, there's a little bit more involved than I thought. Like you coming out being like, I ended up writing, what did you say? Like 11,000 words or was that?
Yeah.
So like you start off, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do 30 stories. And then you're like, oh shit, what's the reality of what that actually looks like? For me, I never had an events background. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to like host this event. I think it'll be fine. And then the first event, everyone rocked up and they're like, so like, we don't know anyone's names. Do you have any like name tags or something? Like, it's like little things like that where you go, oh yeah. Okay. And now I find I'm at that point similar to what you said of like, oh, what's like, how do I continue this? Or I'm more critical about things because I know a lot more now too. So I'm like, from the experiences. So you just go, oh shit, like how do you continue moving forward at the pace you did when you had more of that kind of confidence because you knew less, and now you're like, what is the reality of this now that I know that this is it? Because yours is yours self-funded? Have you been able to get grants and sponsorships and stuff for yours?
Yeah, I've had like one grant from the government, but I've had collaborations where like, hey, that's probably the most income that I've received, but all the exhibitions are self-funded mostly, and which is fine. Like I feel like it's important to put money into your projects to make it, to sustain it, because otherwise, like if you're like, oh, I'm not going to put my money into it, then it never happens. So there's like not really any choice you have other than to do that. But it's really interesting because there's a lot more at stake as well when you get bigger or you have more of an audience or whatever it is, like that you're like, the bar is set higher. So whereas like when you're just starting out, you're like, oh well, like if it fucks up, it fucks up, like whatever. But now it's like, okay, everything has to be to this standard, and like how do I do that or even like increase that to meet the community I have now, or like that the like to top the last project I did or whatever. But I think sustainability is like what I want. Like I want somebody or people to show me who have like had a creative project and turned it into a business, because like it's just us working individually now. Like it'd be amazing if I could have like another staff member and then, you know, build up in that way and then do more things that create a sustainable kind of income to make more exhibitions. And I think that's another thing as well, like dealing with matters of social justice and identity and all of that, you feel weird about like making money from it. And like actually, there was somebody who, I rarely get any negative responses from people about where you're from, which is really good. But somebody like got up in arms about us having merch and like a zine. Like, I think I've sold like 5 tote bags with all the zines sold out for the exhibition, but like, we don't make, we're not out here making like, it's like negative money. But yeah, like that was like a bad comment that someone made about like, you shouldn't profit off like racism and whatever. And I was like, this is a capitalist society. Like, how do you sustain making more stuff that's going to help people? You need money to do that. It's not, I'm not like Amazon. It's just like,
and like, so it's really, on the other hand, like people profit off racism. The majority of people that are on the other side of it are profiting off it. So sorry that you need to do this to continue these, shit pisses me off. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. Anyway. And like, this is my lived experience. Like, this isn't just like, oh, I've started where I'm from. And like, this is 30 years of like a lived experience as a minority, you know, and I want to keep telling their stories. And in order to do that, and you know, I can't like, you get nowhere without like thinking about something sustainably, because you just need resources to move forward. So I just found that really dumb. And I think I said something really polite, like, oh, you know, like the idea is to just like have enough money to make more exhibitions to help more people and to have more, you know, great experiences, like why you came to the page in the first place.
I think stuff like that's ridiculous. And it's something that I've also like toyed with too. It's like this concept of like, our events are free and it's all self-funded right now. But again, and I'm sure you have this similar experience, when you get to a certain level or have a certain like level of community, people assume that there's a lot more people behind this whole thing than it actually is, which is like kind of, it's nice, but it's also like, okay, but like we have to like sustain this somehow. And like, I could never put a price from our community perspective, because I think these conversations need to be had. And the only reason people are there is because other systems have failed people. Do you know what I mean? So you go, no, like I'm only sharing these stories because some of you fucked up, like, you know, the majority of you fucked up, you know, and the other things fucked up because of that. So like, what? Like, and so from those concepts, like now I've had this like solid, and who knows if it's going to work or not, but like my new thing is like, no, because it's not your fault and this isn't that thing, someone else is going to pay for this. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's either going to be through government grants or it's going to be another big business that's got heaps of money. Like, I'm only in the business of taking money from rich people. Like, all of us are struggling. We can't even buy lettuce at this point. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm not in the business of taking money, not even from like middle class people. It's like just from rich people, because you guys have the most money, you know? So it's like, we can't sustain. And whether that's like real or not, like whether this is just like a dream world I'm living in where I'm like, no, fuck you, I'm not going to do it until this happens, or it's like the reality. But again, like there is this like icky feeling of that. But the reality is, if you want to continue doing the good work you're doing, you need something, right? You need money. Again, that's the reality of our world. So yeah, how like are you, like where are you at now, and what are you looking for? Like, how can people help? Like, if there is anybody listening that knows something, I think it would be great. Like, I know I recently have started to get a little better at like asking what I need in order for this to be sustainable. So yeah, I want to ask you, like, what would you need to make this sustainable, or what have you looked at? Even if it's like insight, like you said, from people who have turned a creative project into, or a movement into, something that's more sustainable business-wise, if anyone's listening that can do that as well.
My approach with everything I do is to seek advice of people, for, you know, from the people who I believe are the experts in whatever I want to do or learn about. So yeah, if there's anybody listening who has taken a creative project that's grassroots, and actually grassroots, not like something that has been supplemented, like no shade if it has been, but like really you're just like, you don't know, you don't have any kind of like blueprint or kind of person telling you what to do or backing you, and then turn that into like more of a business structure where like you can sustain that and then bring other people on board and make, you know, more of a structure out of like the project, that would, I would love to speak to you. And like, I mean, just generally I'm looking for, I'm going to really sit down and do like research to find people who I think might be, you know, right to give me advice in that regard. But separate to that, I think like just like structuring something that's in this way that's sustainable, even if it's like, okay, you need to have 2 exhibitions a year, you need to do 5 events with each exhibition and then have tickets for part of that or something like that. And yeah, sustainable also is like to do with time and like workload. So yeah, if you have advice for productivity and like, or, you know, ways that have worked for you to kind of like map out your ideas and turn them into something that's a little bit more, I guess, methodological, then yeah, I'd love to definitely love to hear from people. Or if you know anyone to refer, like slide in and let me know.
All of Sabina's details will be in the show notes. So please do, if you know anyone, yeah, it's or ask somebody, that'd be a great help too, because we want to support like good projects. And I think a lot of people are looking for purpose. And I think one thing I talk about a lot is like purpose and things like that doesn't have to look like you starting these projects. It can be like connecting people and to help continue doing, like other people continue doing work like this. And this stuff doesn't happen without the support of other people. So it is really important that we find whatever way we can to support projects and good like things that are happening in the world. So yeah, if anyone is, please get in touch. The next question I had for you, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this, because I'm sure this has happened a lot throughout your life, is you've been obviously confronted with these conversations and like triggering situations, whether it's like even running this project. I'm sure like there's so many times where it's been quite triggering for you. And also I don't know how do you deal with, first off, I think I'm going to go with this first, like, how do you deal with the emotional side of this? Because it is something that's so close to home. It's like your experience, and then you're having to hear that from people after people. And I think the most difficult part about situations like is there's no solution yet, right? There's no, like you're doing work to try and spread that word. And often it's like, is it getting anywhere? Like, yeah, I'm sharing these people's stories, but is it getting to the people that are causing these problems? How are you dealing with like navigating that? Because I'd assume, I mean, for me, I know that would take up like a lot of capacity that I have. Like you're talking productivity, but how do you deal with the non like methodological side of things, you know, the emotional side of things?
Well, I think that I am very aware that I'm someone who can have these conversations and difficult conversations generally from a really objective point of view. I'm like not easily impacted by stuff like this and, you know, the heavier topics generally. So I think that that's the beauty of like the work that I do, is that I can hold that space for people when people are like, you know, don't feel like having a conversation, whether that's in workspaces or even just like in life when things happen. I'm like always the person that's like, actually, can you not do that? Or like, that's wrong because of this. And a lot of people don't have the capacity to do that. And so like, they shouldn't have to do that. But I think if you are someone that can do that, you should exercise that as much as you can. But sometimes with definitely in 2020, when like everyone was like, oh my God, racism exists. And, you know, at the time I'd been doing Where Are You From for like 2 years. Apart from that, have been like, I've always interviewed people of color, always kind of been, you know, part of those discussions. And through all of my work, I've centered those discussions. And then all of a sudden I had people being like, oh, like talking to me about like racism existing and like all these things. And like, now they want to talk to me about where you're from. And like, now they want to know how I feel and if I experience racism. And that was so triggering, because like even my partner at the time, who is white,
probably not sure.
Yeah, like they were kind of like seeking my advice and approval, and like it was just really bizarre. And I was like, okay, so now all of y'all want to speak to me about racism and where you're from when I've been talking about this for years. Now you care about culture. Now you care about, you know, violence against, you know, various communities. And like, I think that was the most shameful part of it all, was that like, not only were people capitalizing on a moment, whether that be like socially or, you know, actually capitalizing, and, you know, being like, oh, I care, I understand, I read my Google Doc of like, you know, resources about racism, now I get it, now I can have a conversation with you. But it's like, actually, that's a great start. I'm like glad that it happened, because people, it did start a conversation that for many people they weren't even aware of, which is like a problem in itself. But I think the fact that it was started is great. But that now gives people the authority to say, I know what I'm talking about. I know what you're going through. It's okay. Like, I understand. And actually, you don't understand. It takes a lot more to understand. You keep learning. And I think it's about having that kind of like, you know, the humility and staying humble enough to be like, oh, I'm learning and I want to discuss this idea or this thing I've learned, but I'm not going to be an authority on it because like that's still not my lived experience. Like being the authority on something that is just like that's racist as well, being an authority on someone else's experience. Sometimes that gets hard because, yeah, people, I guess like people come to me and like want me to explain to them why something is or isn't racist, or if they've done something or something's happened and if someone's called them out and they don't understand why, like sometimes it becomes my responsibility to show them that. And like for my friends, I'll do that. But yeah, definitely with like 2020, I was like, oh, this is so frustrating. Like you only care because everyone cares now. And so sometimes I'm just like, I choose who I'll have those conversations with over others. In a work circumstance, like any conversation I'm having in relation to the project or during an exhibition, I'm like here, no matter who you are, like I want people to get as much as they can out of the learning experience and also to be validated as much as they can. So if they need me to speak on their behalf or hold space for them, I will.
There's obviously a difference between like personal, like Sabina in her personal life and Sabina at work, like doing all this. Like I find it interesting. Again, it comes down to like what people associate you with the work you do. It's like a doctor goes to a party and they're like, oh, I've got this rash. Like, can you check it out? It's like, babe, I'm just here. Like, I'm just here for the snag. I think that's an amazing thing that you've brought up right now is that idea of just because you do this activism and work doesn't mean you're that go-to point of people like being like, oh, like, well, Sabina says I'm not racist. So like, you know, I think our culture today and with like socials and videos that we can see and stuff like that, it's so easy to fall into that trap of defensiveness. And I know even I, like myself as a white woman, have fallen into it at times or felt as though I've needed to speak in a certain way to combat the things that, or the things that I used to say or the things that I used to do. Again, I think nobody can say they're perfect in any way. And I'm always so wary of people that say that, oh, yeah, I've never done anything like that, or I've never said anything like that, or I've never thought anything like that. It's like, well, babe, like the rest of the world tells you these things. So you have, right? You have, whether it's like consciously or subconsciously, you have. So like acknowledge it and then you can move on, like, you know, move on, go on with your day and all of these, yeah, these kinds of things. I mean, just like listen, like, you know, like, I don't know. I think,
yeah.
And for anyone listening who might be thinking like, oh shit, maybe I have done that, you know, or maybe I have gone to one of my POC friends and like tried to get that validation or tried to speak on their behalf or relate in some way, even if it, with good intention, which I'm sure like nobody's going there doing that to a friend with like an ill intention, right? You're thinking that you're doing these with good intention. I guess what would you say, like be able to have that conversation, or do you appreciate when people can be like, oh, stand back and be like, oh shit, you know, I did this thing, or just make sure you don't make that mistake next time? And obviously you can't speak for everyone here, but just from your personal perspective.
I think the most important thing is being able to acknowledge, as you said, like what the reality of a situation is and being aware of your own position in society in terms of like, and have the spaces that you access that other people don't. And that's your job to be aware of that, not other people. And I think that, you know, for example, like as, you know, I am a Black woman, but I'm also a light-skinned Black woman. I enter spaces that a lot of other Black women don't enter, and I have privileges that they don't as well. It's not to, you know, victimize being darker skinned or anything like that. I just think it's my personal duty to understand that my experience is different, extremely different to people who are darker skinned than me. And so me inserting myself in conversations where like their experience needs to take priority, like for example, in Black Lives Matter, where everyone was kind of differentiating between like being a person of color and being Black, because, you know, Black people experience violence from the police. Black people feel afraid to go into stores and are profiled much more than like people of color. Like I've never had an experience like that. I think that that goes into many kind of like facets of identity and minority status, like with queerness and, you know, the way that you're perceived in your queerness, with ability and you know, being able-bodied with gender and, like, you know, there's just so many like levels of hierarchy within identity that I think it's so important to interrogate and really understand for yourself on your own time with your own resources, not taking from other people, not taking up spaces that, like, you know, in conversations where, like, that person who you have more privilege of in this situation, or maybe you don't have more privilege over them, like, you just, they're trying to explain something to you about their experience that you haven't experienced. It's so important to listen. It's so important to, yeah, not take things personally and not attack. And by listen, I mean, like, close your mouth and, like, stop interjecting and, like, stop talking over and stop saying, sorry, but I didn't, or, you know, reasoning with, you know, trying to rationalize your behavior, whether it was intentional or not. Like, I think that just being neutral and being open and being like, okay, like, I'm human. I'm, you know, there's no shame in making mistakes because you didn't intend to make them. There's no shame in admitting, oh yeah, I do ask people, where are you from? But it's about being like, okay, like, why do I ask that? Like, how can I understand how to better behave in future, or whatever, you know? It's like, there's nothing worse than somebody who won't admit the reality of something in that way, you know, when you're like, when you say to someone like, oh, actually, like, you using the word aggressive is a microaggression because of this or that, and they're like, no, what do you mean? I didn't mean it like that. And it's like, that's even more, that causes even more harm. So, like, I guess to simplify, like, my many things that I just said, just, like, there's no shame in, like, making a mistake, but always, like, have the humility to just, like, sit with what's happened and acknowledge it and process it and move forward. If you can't acknowledge, like, what the reality of the situation and your understanding is and the circumstances, like, you won't ever be able to move forward because you're in denial. So I think that, yeah, just being comfortable with the uncomfortable is, like, yeah, I guess, like, the first step.
I think when it comes to, like, everything in our lives, like, there's this idea that we're supposed to know, like, we're supposed to know all of these things in any sense of the word. We are going to make mistakes. And I know people say that, but I don't know that we all believe it, you know, to an extent, because, like, small, like, when we think of mistakes, we think of these major things, but mistakes are, like, tiny things. Even when it comes to, like, friendships, like, I know the more I grow, the more I'm like, oh shit, like, people are, like, taught to, like, oh, this is how you navigate, like, romantic relationships. But, like, you also have to learn how to navigate friendships as well, and what that looks like, and race and sex and, like, systems you sit in and all of these different things. Like, we're not taught how to do those things. We're not taught how to listen. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We, like, as people, we think awkward silence is, like, the most deadly thing ever. And it's like, babe, like, it's actually really good to stop and think, you know? What I was going to, the initial thing I was going to ask you was, I've tried recently to, like, I think the more you know, the more, like, angry I feel you can get with the world and systems in play and all of these other things. And I'm trying to, like, figure out how to navigate that. I think the more conversations we have at the Millennial Crisis community, the more aware I'm becoming of so many different people's experiences in lots of different ways. And the more frustrated I get, and when I'm put in other positions where I hear people or see things that are harming these people that I've heard their experiences from. And I'm trying to, like, shift my thinking from an individual frustration, like, oh, this person is bad, and this person is an idiot, to, like, why does the world allow this person to think that they can do this, and move, like, more into, like, a systemic thinking of, like, okay, what systems are in play that allow this? Because I do think we are all, like, I think everybody is a lot more similar than we think, in terms of, if we switched roles, it wouldn't be too different. Like, your experience as, like, if you were born, like, white, let's say, or if you were born darker skin, like, our experiences would be different in the world. But as people, like, if we had shifted that, it's because of the way we're socialized. That's what's creating these, like, perspectives and experiences. I wonder, like, how do you deal with, like, individuals that don't want to listen, or how do you channel that frustration that you might experience with these situations?
I can be a bit, like, I don't want to say, I'm trying to think of a better word for, like, not like cutthroat, but like I'm kind of like always like pick your battles with people, especially like I pay a lot of attention to people and how they present themselves and the values they have, especially when I meet somebody new, which can come across as judgmental, but I feel like it's like almost instinctual because maybe being a minority as well, you're always kind of reading who is going to be safe, like whether you're aware of it or not. So I think, but also just generally being someone who is, I guess, thought driven and like idea driven, I'm always like having conversations with people that could possibly reveal, you know, things about who they are, their values or their politics or whatever. So I think that I will give people the opportunity to, I guess, like learn from an interaction or a conversation that we're having, if it's like a difficult conversation, if I care about them. But I'm not one to keep having those same conversations over and over again or keep expecting someone to be different when they've shown me otherwise. So it's kind of like if you do something that I'm like, that's like not fine or cross a boundary or we're clashing and we can't move through that, it's like, you know, two or three times and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to distance myself from that person. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to like that I cut people out of my life. I just think that like it's very important to be discerning with the people that you have around you and to make sure that the people that are around you make you feel good, make you feel safe, lift you up. Don't like, you know, there's like a lot of comparison and jealousy and kind of like overall grossness that's floating around in our generation, I think, because we're constantly exposed to other people's lives. And I, you know, I understand that feeling and I have my own, you know, feelings of comparison and, you know, need for validation or whatever. But I think that like it's really important not to allow people around you who are not batting for your team, because that's just like not what real friendship is or not what real relationship should be. Like people, if someone's making you feel bad, you need to acknowledge that and move away from them. And if you love them or if they are important to you and you have the energy to help them understand why they're doing whatever they're doing is harmful, that's great. But like, don't, there's like a saying, you can't, maybe I'll go for a Maya Angelou quote, like the you know, because they were floating around in 2020. There's like one where she says, if someone shows you who they are, believe them. So I think that's really important to just be like, don't expect somebody to change just because you want them to. And if one thing that's like really important to me is boundary setting in that way. It's like, if you're not my people or whatever, like bye. Because the better you have, the better like connections and relationships you have around you, the better your life will be and the more self-assured you'll be. Like if someone's making you feel shit, like it's just not productive in any way. Protect your time and energy and don't let people who aren't really like your people have anything to do with your life, because you've got to reserve that space for people who are willing to learn and understand and hold space for you and be safe and whatever.
It just really showcases how much like any minority or oppressed group or person, whatever level they are, like how much more like empathy and forgiveness and like the way you navigated even that answer was so polite, I feel. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
I was like, I'm being savage.
you're just being so like, oh yeah, you know, like if someone essentially like, if someone's like trying to like invalidate you, like, and making like your feelings like an argument, like, you know, like give them a couple goes and then like, you know, then you can cut them off. And it's crazy that we're made to feel that way so often in many situations. Yeah. You're just like, it's not until you get time to reflect that you're like, That was so fucked up. I don't know how I even put up with that or whatever in any situation. And I think, again, it's so important when you do get to acknowledge like how you can do that same thing to other people, whether it like by accident or on purpose or whatever, you know, that you can just go, okay, like I experience it in this way. How have I maybe done that to somebody else in a way or not, whether it was a good intention or not, and then be like, oh shit, how do I not do that again? I think like self-accountability is the most important thing, especially if you've been on the receiving end of something like that. It's like, well, okay, this is my experience. Okay, how can I make sure that I don't do that to somebody that is in another position that is deemed, that is like failed, I guess, on a societal level.
And in any way, like just being generally being aware of other people and the way that you treat people and how you make them feel, like I think being aware of like even social cues and like if somebody is pulling back from you in conversation or in body language and understanding why there's that, and like being attuned to that is so important, and reflecting on like if you're, you know, say you're having multiple relationships, not romantic relationships, but like friendships fall apart or people are distancing themselves from you, or a, you know, a situation that's a pattern repeating, it's like it's not necessarily your fault. But it could be, you know, like you should be interrogating what those things are, because that's, I feel like I've done so much. I'm constantly taking stock of like my relationships and what went wrong. And like sometimes it's like they're actually not a match. Like my psychologist always talks about the idea of being a match for somebody, because I do have like a tendency to overthink, and I'll be like, oh my God, like I said this thing or I did this thing. And like I think, you know, I make up this whole catastrophe in my head that doesn't exist. But having like bringing it back to like, oh, maybe like you're just not a match for that person, and not like a love match, but like maybe you like green apples, they like, you know, Pink Lady, and that's okay. And you're just not gonna, it doesn't mean that Pink Ladies are, you know, better than green apples, but like you just don't see eye to eye. And that's such a powerful analogy for life, because everyone is so different. And as you said, we're all, there's like 2 degrees of separation between us, but also the circumstances of our lives and everything we've gone through to get to where we are and meet in this moment is so different. Like you have no idea all the experiences that make someone who they are, just as they don't about you. So it doesn't necessarily mean that because you have conflict or because you maybe have to veto a few friends before you build a collection of, or like a circle of really nice solid friendships, that there's anything wrong with you or them. It's just about like, yeah, being attuned to those things and being attuned to, yeah, your behavior and your values and where you want to place your eggs.
Yeah. No, 100%. And I think when like we, because like Millennial Crisis, we do like conversational events. And when we do that now, I think a lot of people like come to that realization that a lot of their friendships before were circumstantial. And like when they had these more open conversations, or when you're traveling or different things where you get to talk to different kinds of people, whether they're more similar or more different to you, you can come to these realizations of like, oh, my friendships or my situations or the conversations that I have been having or struggling with, or the feelings that I've had, are situational because these people have been around me and I've been forced to be there. It's not necessarily me that is a bad friend. These are just not my people, and I can seek finding my quote unquote people somewhere else, and I shouldn't have to feel these ways all the time, or, you know, whatever those experiences are for different people. I think that's it's an interesting thing, and a whole, I think we could go more, but I've just looked at the time and I'm like, shit, we are getting towards the end of the podcast. Okay. I have one question before we get to our final questions of the podcast, but that is like, if there is somebody that is feeling out of place or feeling as though like they're alone in their experience, similar to what you kind of explained in the beginning, how you were trying to figure out like, is this a valid experience that I'm having, or is this something that other people are experiencing too? If someone is feeling really isolated in that feeling right now, what's some, I guess, advice you would have for somebody like that?
Personally, when I felt alone or when I feel alone, I try and understand why it is I'm feeling that way. I guess like feeling like physically alone and distanced from other people, just go somewhere that you are going to find people like you or people who are interested in what you're interested in, and or take yourself out for, you know, a coffee, go for a walk, go to a gallery, or whatever it is that you like doing, try and occupy yourself with that, or seek out certain, you know, spaces that you might be able to have proximity to someone who is like you or something that might interest you or something like that. So if that's, I guess, like for physical isolation is something that I do a lot, is like if I'm feeling separated from my friends, I'll like go and spend more time with them. Or if I'm feeling like uninspired or like I need to look after myself, I'll do something nice, like, yeah, go for a walk or like buy myself lunch or something like that. But I think in terms of like being isolated in your experience, it's like a similar thing in that like you have to find people who, or information or something that reflects who you are. Like, for example, where are you from led me to understanding that I am a mixed race person. Whereas before it was always like, oh, you're like the black girl, or no, you're like not that black, or you're like, you know, your mom's white, or, you know, it's just all these things that kind of like dissected my identity. And then like, when I did Where Are You From, I was like, oh, actually I'm like one whole thing. Like I am mixed. I am multicultural. Like, my mom is Australian Irish, sure. My dad's Nigerian. My stepmom is Filipino. My brother and sister are Filipino. There's so many cultures that make up me and my experience. And all those things being in one person who lives in Melbourne and, you know, grew up here and, you know, is who I am, that's like one thing. It doesn't mean that I'm like, I have to belong to groups that other people perceive me as. And so I think with me, like I've definitely cultivated a friendship group where a lot of my friends are people of color. If they're not people of color, they're interested in things that I am, like the arts. They're politically aligned. We have really intense, strong conversations where we put everything out on the table about how we're feeling about, you know, what's going on in the news or like what happened to us or our lives or our like romantic relationships. And this is something that's like, there's no performance in my relationships. Like, it's all very authentic. And I think I have a very good gauge for fakeness because I'm just like not fake. I'm always like, this is who I am. And it's like, I'm going to scream that from the hills. And if you don't like it, then like go, what, job on, you know? So I think it's about finding people, like really thinking about like, what's important to you? Who are you? Like, how do you want to feel when you're in a social setting? And seek, or like even a professional setting, even like all, you know, just how do you want to feel in the world? What do you want to gravitate towards? And just trying as hard as you can to muster up the courage to seek out those experiences and those environments that will validate who you are. Because I think that there's space for everybody, even if it means like feeling a bit uncomfortable by going to a gallery and striking up a conversation with somebody, or starting a new job and asking your colleague if they want to go to a show with you that week or a drink or something like that. I think just having the courage to seek out spaces that make you feel good and people that make you feel good and reflect who you are is the best remedy for isolation. And it's also okay to just be alone. Like, if you don't want to be around anyone, or you feel like you don't have any friends because you've realized that they're all not like you and they were all from high school and you don't have anything in common anymore, it's okay to just be like, okay, I'm going to withdraw and I'm going to spend time with myself and enjoy the things that I want to do. And in time, I'm sure that those circles will rebuild around you as you, you know, have spend more time with yourself and you can meditate on what's important to you. Because I think that there's nothing worse than feeling the like pressure to be social or to keep friendships and or like relationships that aren't making you feel good and aren't positive just because you feel like you have to, or because you feel like you can't be alone. I think that if you can't be alone, that's something you should really, like really, really work on before anything else and understand why you feel like that, and not just like alone as in single. I mean, like alone generally, because I think you're being comfortable with yourself and understanding how to make yourself feel safe and comfortable is really, really important. So, and that will teach you a lot about the relationships that you want to have in your life.
Thank you for that. All incredible advice. I know that is definitely going to help somebody in whatever situation they are feeling alone in. And I think we have this funny thing of like thinking it's us and not them. And like often it is like neither of us. It's just like you said, yeah. One person likes pink ladies, one person likes green apples, yeah. And like jog on, go do your green apples. Go to your pink ladies. And you said jog on and I was thinking in my head, fuck off. And I was like, you've been so like polite throughout this thing. And I'm like, no time.
I feel like I was thinking fuck off too, but I was like,
how do I say it?
I'm always I like swear a lot because I'm very impassioned when I speak, but sometimes I'm like, you don't need to swear all the time.
No, we welcome swearing here. Okay, so I've got three questions that I ask all of my podcast guests before we finish up and talk about this week's challenge you've got for everyone too. So the first question I have for you is, what is the first small step you took to get to where you are today?
This is going to be like a bit of an annoying answer, but like just any step, like just taking a step. I can't tell you exactly what the first step was, but I think throughout all the things I do, I have this approach of like not overthinking it, just getting it done. So just taking the first step, whether that means, say, you want to be a writer, just starting to write, like start journaling, or start reading more articles or something to get inspiration, but just taking a step, like don't do nothing.
And I love that you preface with like, this is an annoying answer. I feel like the older I get, the more like nuanced and like gray my responses get to things, because I'm like, oh, it's really not black and white, is it? The next question I have for you is, what is your biggest millennial crisis right now? And I define a millennial crisis as a privilege problem that consciously or subconsciously affects your mental health or well-being.
My millennial crisis is like having too many things to do, just having too many things to do and so many things. Like I just care about all these things I want to do so much. And there's only 7 days in a week. Like the amount of times that I'm like, I just wish I had one more day in a week that like, you know, the whole world was like one lockdown a week for one day. Amazing. Just to catch up on everything. But yeah, so I think that, yeah, it's hard to kind of focus on one thing and get it done, but trying to do one thing at a time, I think, is like what I'm going to start with. That's
brilliant crisis, and one I'm sure a lot of people are relating to hearing it. And then the final question I have is, what is one thing you are still curious about or would like to explore?
I think other ways of living. Like I am very like, I mean, I just got back from New York and I used to live there many years ago, and it's really kind of reignited that kind of desire to explore living in other places in the world, because I think that like as much as like I've gotten so much from Melbourne and it's where I'm from and there's so much to love about it, there's so much more out there, and I think that that's something that we can forget and get a little bit stuck in our bubble with. And actually the stuff that we worry about day to day doesn't really matter, and there's so much out there to explore. So I think that I'm really curious about where I'm going to go in terms of like, you know, living and exploring other parts of the world.
I love that. I can't wait to see where are you from take over across the globe in the coming years. I have no doubt that you'll find a way to make it sustainable and allow it to grow and be what it should be and what it deserves to be. So it's very exciting years to come, I'm sure. Now, you have a challenge that you would like everybody to do this week. Do you want to let everyone know what that challenge is?
Yes. A few years ago, I went to a workshop, like a creative workshop, and Sarah Firth, who lives in Melbourne, she's a creative, but I know she does many things. She kind of like said this thing about having an idea and working backwards. So that's something that I try to look at with any vision or idea that I have or task that I want to approach. I will look at the end vision or like the finished product in my head. Some people actually have like ideas come to them in the opposite way, like they have like the steps and then they don't know what the end product's going to look like. So whichever way for you, starting with your idea and working backwards to figure out the steps for what that thing's going to be.
That is really cool. I'm excited to even try and see how I can do something like that, because I feel like a lot of us get stuck in the concept or the idea and not figuring out what that step is to take as well. That'll be really cool. I just wanted to say thank you so much, Savina, for coming on and for being so open and sharing. I think everyone's going to take so much away from this conversation. And I also want to say like a huge congratulations for one, like you started, where are you from, back in like 2018, right? So like for growing this and sticking with it for so long, because I know it is not easy to do. So a huge congratulations to how far you've been able to take this thing. And I'm sure I have I honestly have no doubt that you won't be able to continue growing it and creating more of an impact with it. So huge congratulations and thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.